Congratulations.
You're listening to Congratulations Pine Tree, the Bay's number one arts and culture podcast with me, Kate Rhodes.
And me, Maysoon Wazwaz.
And we're here. We are in the San Francisco International Airport Hyatt Regency Multiplanetary Hotel talking to Zoe Talaporos, curator, scholar, figure, head.
Hey.
Okay, great. Okay, now, Zoe, do you want to take us around to some highlights?
Sure.
Okay, great. So is it true that anybody can just come here? When you take the air train, you can get to the Hyatt. It's lovely. There's a fireplace. Are all the citizens of the Bay Area allowed to just come and be here?
Yeah, this is actually considered a public space. So it's kind of a weird project for us because we don't normally partner with corporations.
Us being the San Francisco Arts Commission.
That's right.
Who you're talking about not as a employee.
As an individual. So this is actually city-owned property. It's on the airport's campus, but it is leased long-term by the Hyatt. But technically, it is a public space and open to the public. So all the artwork that we're going to be looking at today is within the public's view. You don't need to have purchased a room or anything to view the artwork here.
Or have an airplane ticket.
That's right.
You can come, you know, and sit at the bar and have a drink or get a snack. You could maybe set up a meeting here if you just wanted to get the hell out. You know, there's so many options.
Can you have your birthday party here?
You could. There's a restaurant downstairs and lots of meeting spaces.
I'm wondering about how much weirdness you could get away with. Like if I brought a bunch of board games, would no one come and be like, oh, sorry, Mason. Like, would no one come and be like, what are you doing?
Well, so far no one has stopped us recording or not buying anything, really.
Okay, so we got a piece over here that's a bunch of hanging ellipse shapes.
So this piece is by Jacob Hashimoto, who is based in New York. It's a series of over 3,500 kites, which are made out of rice paper with UV ink prints. And those are dipped in resin and framed in bamboo and then hung with string.
So this was commissioned for this space?
Yes. All the artworks that we're going to see today were commissioned specifically for this site, with the exception of some of the 2D work, which we directly purchased.
What happens? Are you like, do you come to the artist and be like, this is what the space is, give us an idea?
Yes, but there's multiple steps before that to get to that point. Just to kind of walk you through our selection process, we issue a call for artists. So it's a public call, anyone can apply. And then once we receive the applications, we have a panel that sort of calls that group down to a short list of artists for each opportunity. And then those short lists are presented to a larger panel comprised of the stakeholder group. So that's like a member of the Hyatt, the Arts Commission, some airport people, outside arts professionals. And they choose usually 3 to 4 artists per opportunity to make proposals for the site.
Okay, that's something I've also wondered about. There's a lot of public artworks that are outside or in a window where the sun shines in. Mm-hmm. And you guys always have to think about it not getting bleached like VHS tape boxes at Blockbuster.
So I worked with Jacob to source a specific type of resin that is very UV resistant. So he worked with a fabricator that put it under some sort of lamp that kind of simulated what would happen to the resin over 10 years. And eventually there probably will be some discoloration of the work, but we're hoping that it'll be sort of evenly distributed so it kind of looks intentional over time. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of maintenance issues that we deal with in general. Also just sort of code compliance stuff that you wouldn't normally think about when you're installing artwork anywhere. So this piece in particular, we had a real hard time with the fire marshal. As you can imagine, it's over a restaurant. It spans 2 floors of the hotel space. You can't see it downstairs. Downstairs, there's a pizza oven nearby. So,
my God.
There's a lot of the fire marshal had a lot of concerns. So we went through an extensive process with this artwork where we were trying to figure out how to coat it with flame retardant. But in that process, the artwork was actually disintegrating. So once we applied the work, the resin would shrink away from the bamboo and it would essentially like fall apart.
Whoa.
So we also had to work with a fire protection engineer and do essentially burn studies. So we used these extra discs that the artist had and literally set them on fire and videotaped it. So I have this, you know, whole file folder on my desktop at work, which is this just artworks being
burned.
So yeah, we sent that to the fire marshal so we could see, you know, sort of the rate at which things were burning. And anyway, it was a long process that took a long time to convince them that we could actually safely install this, but it worked out.
Is stuff like that fun or a huge hassle?
It's a huge hassle, but I actually find it kind of interesting. I mean, with each piece, there are unique challenges, and I learn so much from every artwork that I work on. So I'm able to bring that knowledge to the next hanging piece that I do. And so it's all very useful. But at the time when you're in it, it's completely maddening, and it's very challenging work.
It's wild. It's a very complicated piece.
Yeah. And all the strings, maybe, it makes me nervous. I'm like, don't get tangled ever.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, you know, if somebody, so it's also next to kind of a railing, a kind of half wall. And I imagine if someone was holding their child close to this, I mean, hopefully they wouldn't. That seems dangerous in itself. But that a kid could, like, just reach out and grab one. Has that happened at all?
An adult could.
I don't think it's happened yet, but we did actually talk through that scenario during installation. So, you know, there were several of us standing at this exact spot, you know, reaching out, seeing how far, you know, what would it take to actually, like, touch one of these discs and what would happen. And we basically just decided to leave it and wait for that thing to happen and not preempt it. And so far it's been okay.
Are there extras of these that you can swap in if one gets torn down?
Yeah, we have a whole box of extras.
Hell yeah, that's so funny. Okay, we're going into the bar now.
Is this called the bar lounge area? Like, if you were trying to direct someone to see any of these particular works, like, what is this space called?
I think it's just called the fourth floor bar.
Okay.
Fourth floor bar. And here we have a piece. Tell us about it.
So the program also includes an extensive collection of two-dimensional artworks. So for that program, we largely focused on Bay Area artists. And so in the bar area, we've got a triptych by Crystal Liu, which is hand marbled paper. It's essentially like an emotional or psychological dreamscape.
I didn't realize that they're sort of collaged, which if you look close, like the marbling is cut out in some areas, and then, I don't think I realized with her work before when I was looking at it.
Yeah, it's a combination of hand marbled paper that's collaged and painting and drawing applied to the surface.
How are these, does this kind of thing go through the same process where like a whole committee is deciding what works to purchase?
It's a similar process, but, and I'm not going to bore you with like the details of city contracting, but because it's not a new commission, it's a little bit looser in terms of how we acquire work. So it is acquired through a panel process, but we don't issue a call. Work is selected by staff recommendations. It was a lot of me going out and looking at work and bringing selections to a committee to decide from.
Who's on the committee?
It's the same panel that was looking at the work for the larger commissions.
Is that the visual arts panel?
So there's the review panel, and then that goes to the visual arts committee, which is a subcommittee of the arts commission. So there's like a million layers of review and approval. It goes through the panel process to the VAC, the visual arts committee, then to the full arts commission, to the airport arts steering committee, and to the airport commission for final approval before I can do anything with this work. So it's quite extensive.
That's wild. I didn't realize that there were two extra steps or at least 2 extra steps there for this work.
How often does something get like turned away and then you have to like be like, shit, I just spent a lot of time like putting my stuff together to like support this work, getting through this, and then you're like, son of a bitch.
Thankfully for me, that's never happened. You know, we really try to sort of vet the work very early on in the process. And, you know, before we're even at the point of soliciting applications from artists, we're in pretty direct communication with the stakeholders and the airport in particular to kind of define like sort of what the goals are and what we're looking for.
I wanted to ask a slightly different question, and that was sort of how do you, I guess I'm just thinking, like, how do you choose works for these particular spaces? Like, what are you thinking about when you're choosing work for the Hyatt's bar area? Do you know what I mean? Like, how are you?
Because it can't, like, there's things you can't choose, right? Like, you can't put up a bunch of Mike Couchard drawings, you know, right, of, like, wieners.
Yeah, so at the beginning of the program, we talked directly with the architects who had kind of a design concept for the whole space. So if you look around, there's, you know, there's a lot of like natural elements, and they wanted the space to kind of reflect the unique landscape of the Bay Area and also speak to the sort of legacy of craft and bespoke work.
Hi. If you're out here at the check-in desk, you've got another suspended piece. Can you tell us a little bit about this? It looks like circles.
Can I just say it reminds me a little bit of the Olympic circles.
Reminds me, soon of the Olympic circles. Reminds me of donuts.
What does it remind you of? Do you have any like circle thing?
I think I've been looking at this artwork for so long that I can't see.
It reminds you of itself.
You're right, exactly.
Got it. Cool.
Yeah.
No worries.
So this is a work by Tahiti Pearson, who's based in Nevada City. And he is he went to SFAI to study painting, but then dropped out to kind of do more street art type of work. So kind of in the era of like the Mission School. And as part of that practice, he started doing stenciling, kind of morphed into a paper cutting practice. So most of what Tahiti does is actually paper cuts. But of course, you know, you're working in a public space, the work has to stand the test of time and hold up over many years. So we worked with a fabricator to translate this into laser cut metal. But it looks very much like his paperwork.
Yes, it does. It's beautiful.
Yeah. So a lot of what we do is work with artists that work in materials that aren't typically suited for public space, and then figure out a way to translate that into something that's going to be long-lasting and durable. And this is Tahiti's first public art project that's permanent.
Right on. Okay, now generally, not this piece specifically, but generally, when you guys are going to commission something like this, what is the budget that artists would have to work with?
That varies quite a lot. So the funding for all of this work comes from the 2% for art ordinance. So every city has an art enrichment ordinance, which allocates a certain percent of capital improvement costs to go to art in those spaces. So anytime there's like a new public building or a renovation to a terminal in the airport or a new park or something like that, 2% of those funds are set aside for art. So that's what has funded all of these pieces. And for each piece, we kind of evaluate the location early on, and we think, okay, well, this is going to be a hanging piece, sort of based on our previous experience. What do we think the ballpark of this budget's going to be? So we parse it out, and then the artists are given a budget and say, make a work within this budget. Mm-hmm.
And then, like, so if an artist needs to go get a fabricator or go get an assistant or whatever, somebody who's a specialist or something, do you guys, like, hook them up with that? Or, I mean, does it kind of vary, like, who already has a team and who, like, needs a little extra bump?
Yeah, it also kind of varies. You know, we work a lot with artists that it is their first time making public art, so they would never even think about having somebody else make their piece. So we have a list of fabricators that we work with regularly that we point artists to. And then there are other artists who fabricate their own work, like Jacob Hashimoto makes all of his own pieces. And then there are artists who have long-term relationships with fabricators and artisans that they continuously use. So it kind of varies, but it's all we work very closely with the artists to determine what the fabrication technique is going to be and who's going to make it.
I'm always blown away by this, the notion that, you know, the artist is given the full budget and they have to manage that budget, like all of the, like the fabric, like hiring, getting the fabricators, the materials fees, like all of that stuff makes me, like, that's a big job.
It's like being a small business owner.
Especially for a first time, maybe public artist like Tahiti, right? Like that, what is the, how do you, I guess, usher an artist through that process, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I work really closely with the artists to make sure that they understand what they're supposed to be doing. The Arts Commission, or meaning me in this case, I manage all of the installation, so they're not responsible for doing that.
Okay.
So that's a separate contract, but typically the artist is responsible for working directly with their fabricators and managing those payments and everything, but, you know, I pretty much walk them through it all the, like, every step of the way.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for artists that are maybe not with the Arts Commission, but are like being commissioned to do some kind of work for somebody with a lot of money?
What do you mean? What kind of advice are you thinking about?
Just general. Say, you know, okay, let's have a hypothetical example. What's the guy? Elon Musk. Okay. He's trying to get somebody to do a commission for the Tesla factory to do an installation or a mural or whatever. And he goes to artist Jiminy Johnson, who's never done a public work before, is an emerging artist, maybe 3 years out of their master's degree. Okay, what do you say? And they're like, Zoe, what do I do? He says, for me to set my own budget, what do I do?
I think it depends on if there's a project manager already on Elon Musk's team. But assuming not, then they might want to hire somebody to help them. It's a lot for artists to manage. So, okay, let me back up. There's one of the advice that I give first-time artists is ask for what you need. You know, like if you're working with big budget projects, like make sure that you're paying yourself well. And
how much would that be?
Our rule of thumb is not to exceed 25% of the total budget for your soft costs. So that's like your artist fees, your studio assistants, design help, you know, basically anything that's hard is like the, like a hard cost is like the metal for this piece, or, you know, or a hard cost is like something you absolutely can't negotiate, like how much it's going to cost to install it. But you want to get quotes from people to figure out what those costs are. So you shouldn't just make it up, you know, and base your numbers on talking to people and really trying to hone in on a budget that seems realistic. But it's sometimes hard to know that for first-time artists, you know, what is realistic and what's not. So that's what we do at the Arts Commission as project managers, is try to, you know, usher them through that process so that what they're proposing is feasible.
So wait, okay, so 75% of the amount you're asking for your budget should be for the actual shit you're using to make the thing.
Yeah, that's right. And up to 25% should be for your artist fee and things like graphic design or, you know, studio assistance or whatever.
Okay, is there no floor of like the absolute least amount an artist should have as their artist fee for something they're doing for a multi-billionaire?
I think that you don't want to go lower than 12%.
Of the total budget?
Of the total budget for the project, okay. Yeah.
What if they don't give you a budget? Like, you are supposed to name your own.
Then I think that's kind of unethical, personally, to let the artists name their price, because they're going to lowball you most of the time. So if you are in a position where you have a ton of money, you should be upfront about what that is. And it should be a conversation with the artist. You know, if they propose something that's going to be a lot less money to produce than what you have, then it should all be transparent. But I'm also working with public funds, so that's a little bit different. So maybe private corporations can do whatever they want, but I personally think that conversations around budget should be very transparent.
Okay, now we're out here by the escalator, and we're looking at a massive stained glass window by the artist
Sarah Kane.
Good job. 10
the
points.
The title of the work is called We Will Walk Right Up to the Sun. Is that a lyric? That's a song lyric, it sounds like. Walk right up to the sun, hand in hand.
Can you tell us about this piece?
This piece is huge, Zoe. It's freaking huge.
And it has like panels that look almost like tie-dye, where it's doing like rainbow and shit.
So this is also Sarah Kane's first permanent public art project. Also, I used to be a Bay Area artist. She went to SFAI for undergrad and then UC Berkeley for her master's degree, and is now based in Los Angeles. But she is mostly a painter that's gone into doing kind of more immersive installations, but this is the first time she's translating her work into glass. So for this piece, she worked with Judson Studios, which is a very old glass studio based in Los Angeles that worked with Frank Lloyd Wright. This piece has something like 36 different glass techniques in it, and it definitely has sort of like a 70s aesthetic that the artist was going for. So there's kind of some textured glass that doesn't have any color, that's kind of like 70s shower.
First thing I feel like I notice is that there's so many different things going on. It's not just like it's like just the same kind of glass, different color.
There's like
so many things.
Yeah, multiple levels of opacity. Okay, we're down here on the second floor now, looking over what would you call that, Zoe?
A glass railing.
Yes. Huge two-story mosaic that, to my eye, looks like an aerial view of the San Francisco Bay.
That's correct.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Who made this one?
This is made by Ellen Harvey, who's based in New York, and it was fabricated by Miyoto Mosaics. So you're right, it is a map of the Bay Area, but it's inverted to highlight the green spaces in the area.
Okay, so the bulk of the land is in a white
glass tile, actually, hand cut, hand assembled, and hand installed. And in the water area, you'll see these kind of shimmery silver pieces. That's white gold leaf applied to glass.
What?
And it was tile that was saved from like 40 years ago. The company that installed this has had sort of generations of people running it. And this white gold leaf tile had been hanging around the studio, sort of waiting for a project worthy enough for it. That is this project.
Wow.
So it's very, very special stuff. It's an amazing piece that was pretty much all made in Italy and then shipped over here.
Damn. People, if you're coming out here, don't miss this one.
Yeah, can you figure out where the airport is?
Whoa.
That big black dot.
There's a big dot. Is that metal? Is that
it's
brass?
It's actually gold.
Actual gold?
It's not actual.
No!
But it is a gold circle.
What if it was like a nugget of gold just like popped in there?
Yeah.
There's a gold circle where SFO is located. Got some more wall works. This mood music is really doing it for me.
So this is a piece by David Wilson that is, it's a plein air drawing created at a spot in Claremont Canyon. So each of these tiles is Sumi ink on paper, and the artist went out to the same spot every day to draw a piece of the artwork.
It's so coherent.
Yeah. I actually don't know how he creates that consistency, but it is quite amazing. He must mark it somehow, or I don't know. I don't know how he does this, but it's incredible. But you'll notice that, you know, weather plays a part of the piece. So there are certain days where he's gone out and it's raining, and that affects the ink, and that gets incorporated into the work. It is very poetic to sort of incorporate the natural world as sort of a collaborator. There's also a little tiny airplane up there that the artist decided to capture in honor of the airport, which I thought was really sweet.
That's very sweet.
On theme. Okay. Okay, and then we have a piece. If you get over here across from what may or may not be a baby changing station, and you're kind of looking out the window at where the airplanes are, and you kind of look over to the side, there is a giant metal sculpture, huge sculpture. How tall is that thing?
It's 35 feet tall.
And who is the artist? It kind of reminds me, and obviously you don't have to acknowledge that I'm saying this at all.
I know what you're going to
say.
But
it does remind me of anal beads.
You are not the first person to say that. Yeah, I was completely blind to it until we went to install it, and then all of the installers were like totally smirking and laughing about it. So, yeah.
So many sex toys are incredibly aesthetically considered. Okay, and so, and who is the artist again? You got to go out to Japan, right, when this was being made to kind of...
Yeah. Cool. So the artist is Kohei Nawa, and the work was fabricated in Hokkaido. So as part of our process, I normally visit the fabrication studio when the work is about 75% done. And so for this, I got to go out to Japan to go look at the art, which was amazing.
Wild. What happens if you go to the place and you're like, this is 3 times smaller than we asked for, or something is fucked up about it?
Yeah, it almost never happens, but we typically do like a 50% and 100% fabrication check-in. But, you know, the Arts Commission wasn't going to fund 2 trips to Japan, so I kind of went at the 75% mark. And there's so much coordination and discussion around the work that, and, you know, photographic documentation, that I was pretty certain that we were going to get what we thought we were going to get. But it's just kind of a quality assurance check-in to make sure that someone has their eyes on it in person before it literally gets on a boat shipped over to the United States.
Okay, Zoe, you also are an independent, do-your-own-thing curator and person in the world, and you have a new project that you started with Sarah Hotchkiss, is that right?
That's right. Sarah and I just started a project called Premier Junior. It's an exhibition space located on a tiny billboard affixed to the back of a much larger billboard in the Inner Sunset.
So great.
Yeah, so it's like 6 by 12 feet on the back of what would be like a normal billboard size. So we're commissioning 4 Bay Area artists to create works for the space that'll rotate every 3 months.
Do you feel like so vibrant and free when you do this kind of curation? Because you don't have to check in with 12,000 people.
I do. I mean, that was one of the main reasons I wanted to do the project. It's an opportunity for me to work without any sort of restriction. And, you know, Sarah and I are basically just renting the space from Clear Channel. And we, as long as they are okay with the imagery, we can do whatever we want there.
How did you come across this as a thing to do?
Yeah, Sarah lives a couple blocks away from the billboard, so she had been walking past it for a long time and just kind of imagining that it would be a cool space for art. Mm-hmm. And we happened to have lunch one day, and I was telling her that I kind of wanted to start up a new project, but didn't want to deal with like running a space or having anything that was like too admin heavy, because that's what I do for a living. And so she mentioned this idea, and it was great. I was totally on board.
So who's the first artist?
So Lindsay White, it's going to be our first artist, and we have an opening on Sunday, February 9th from 2 to 5 p.m., and it's at the corner of 7th and Irving, just outside Fireside Bar.
And then after party at the bar?
I assume so, yeah.
And I think I saw somewhere that there would be, like, drinks or snacks or something on, like, the top of the garbage can. Was there some, like, reference to, like, there's no surfaces outside?
I think that might
the
have been...
Stand? Was
yeah,
that me making that up?
I think we had talked about it in passing, but, you know, Sarah and I were scouting the area just to sort of imagine, like, how would we have an opening when there's no space? And so there's this series of newsstands, and we're like, perfect, we could just put our exhibition binder on top of this and maybe some snacks and... Yeah. You know, that's probably as good a place as any.
You could roll up with like a cooler on wheels, throw it full of Tecate or something.
Yeah, we thought about that, and we've also thought about like maybe having binoculars on site to view the work.
That's so good.
So we'll see. We haven't quite figured it out, but you'll have to come out on Sunday the 9th and check it out.
Yeah, can't wait.
And you guys are taking applications for that, right?
Yeah, we haven't programmed the rest of the year out, so we're definitely taking submissions. If anyone has an idea for the billboard, you can email us at premierjuniorspace@gmail.com. I didn't think about that. And junior is just JR.
Do you have any advice for artists wanting to apply for that? What kind of work you guys would be looking for?
We're totally open. Yeah, I mean, I think it's just an opportunity to like do something kind of weird. So, and think about it as, we're interested in artists that can think about the site being kind of odd in itself, mm-hmm. and sort of what, you know, what they could accomplish there. Also just sort of thinking about advertising space in general and kind of disrupting that. But we're also excited about maybe working with people that don't necessarily work photographically and seeing how like a painter or a sculptor might translate their ideas into that space.
So I feel like your work with the Arts Commission is almost perfect, right? Just sort of thinking about artists and how they typically work and how it translates into the work you're doing through your job, but then also through this is exciting.
Putting artists in weird places.
Yeah, and it's just nice to have a project where, you know, it's just whatever Sarah and I decide we want to do.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I love it. You're like, check. I talked to one person today. Cool. Yeah. It's perfect.
At the end of an interview, we always like to ask our interviewees if there's anything else you want listeners to know.
I'd like listeners to know that even if you think that your work isn't appropriate for public space, or you don't work in a medium that, you know, is permanent, you know, we're really interested, I guess for both my projects, we're interested in working with artists to translate those ideas. Mm-hmm. And if you have any questions about anything, you can totally just contact me.
That's very generous of you.
Yes.
Bless you. Okay. Oh, and that sound.
It says we all ascend to heaven.
As we ascend to heaven,
is the music for the episode going to be courtesy of the Hyatt?
It'd be so funny.
And as always,
congratulations.